the GVA Legal Podcast. My name is Luisa Matumurithi, and I'll be your host for today. And on today's podcast, we have our guest, Mugambi Laibuta. We're going to be discussing all things data protection and privacy. Mugambi Laibuta is an advocate of the High Court of Kenya. He's a trained mediator, a legislative counsel, and policy analyst. And he is currently undertaking his PhD at the University of Witwatersrand. He is researching and writing on privacy and data protection in Kenya. He's also consulted and advised and helped draft various policy development, governance, rule of law, constitutionalism, legislative and policy documents to do with privacy and data protection. So he's definitely the best person to have on this podcast. Please say hello to our listeners, Mugambi.
Yeah, hello, listeners. Thank you, Luisa, for inviting me to the GVA Legal Podcast. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. So let's get straight into it, Mugambi. The Data Protection Act, or in short, the DPA, came into force on the 25th of November, 2019. It is now the premier legislative act that now governs data protection in Kenya, along with a number of other acts. Please discuss the key concepts regarding data protection and privacy as outlined in the act.
Okay. As you said, it's the document that really regulates data protection. But it finds its base and Article 31 of the Constitution. Article 31 of the Constitution provides for the right to privacy. So when you read the long title of the Data Protection Act, it says that it's implementing provisions of Article 31 C and D of the Constitution. So we are dealing with a fundamental right and freedom. All right? Now, the key highlights of this Data Protection Act is that, one, it created the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner. So this Office of the Data Protection Commissioner, it's the oversight authority or the regulator that will see whether what we call data controllers or data processors comply with the principles and Article 31 of the Constitution and provisions of the Data Protection Act. So this office has various powers and functions. Powers, I've said, one of them is providing oversight. Secondly, it's supposed to provide education to the public, to data processors and data controllers. And when I talk about data processors and data controllers, I mean those individuals, institutions in private, public, academic, whatever sector it is, that collect, store, analyze, and share personal data. Personal data being any information regarding a natural person, a human being, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Then this office, so it also has investigatory powers, can investigate and see whether people are complying with the principles set out under Article 25 of the Data Protection Act. Section 25 of the Act talks about these principles. For example, you need to inform people when you're processing their data. You need to have a lawful reason for processing people's data. You must process it fairly, without bias. You must be transparent. You must be accountable. You must ensure that this data is secure. If you're transferring data, there's supposed to be security mechanisms. Then we have Section 26 that provides for the rights of a data subject. For example, you and I, and as I say, that data subject is any human being who is within the Republic of Kenya. You have a right to be informed of what your data is going to be used for. You have a right to refuse for your data to be used. You have a right to correction of your data. You have a right to deletion of your data where it's not required anymore. And also you have a right, though it's not set out in Section 26, you have a right to make complaints to the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner in the event that you're unhappy with how your data was being processed. Or there are some adverse effect or some harm that has been occasioned upon you because of the processing of your data. We also have Section 30, Section 31. Section 30 talks about the legitimate reasons for processing data. So if you're processing data, why will you process data? One, through consent, that someone has to consent that you're going to process their data. Let me give an example.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I was coming into GVA, let's assume the guard asked for my details.
Mm-hmm.
If the guard asked for my details, I have to ask him, so why he needs to tell me why he's collecting, for example, why he's penning down my name, my ID, my telephone number, and the vehicle that brought me here.
Yes. Okay?
So I have the right to say yes or no. But even if I say yes or no, there are consequences because let me give another example. If you're applying for a passport and you're saying you're not going to give your birth certificate, then you'll not get a passport.
True.
The same if here, if the rule is that if somebody does not disclose who they are or who they are going to see, then they are not allowed into the premises.
Yes.
Other legitimate reason is by contract. If you're an employee, let's say you and I are employees of GVA.
Yes.
There's a contract. It's a contractual. So it's a contractual relationship where the employer gives a contract and says, for us to hire you, let's say you've been interviewed, then they say, for us to offer you the contract, you need to provide certain information. As an advocate, valid current practicing certificate, LLB certificate, KRA PIN, and ETC. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So the contractual obligation is what warrants the employer to collect this information.
Yes.
Also, information, data can be processed for a public purpose. Let's say for investigation by the national security organs. It could be for public health reasons. You've seen recently about data relating to COVID-19 being collected and being made public.
Yes.
Another highlight is that there are penalties for not adhering to the provisions of this act. I already talked about the penalties that the Data Protection Officer, Data Office of the Data Protection Commissioner could issue penalties. So if somebody is not compliant, for example, under Section 63, could be fined 5 million shillings.
Hmm.
Section 65, which I think is the one that people don't pay much attention to, which I think is the worst, because it talks about damages. And it says that somebody may be awarded damages for harm that may be occasioned by use of their data, but it doesn't give a scale. So you see a lot of people look at this Section 63, the 5 million or the 1% or less, and they think, okay, that's not much.
Hmm.
But you go to Section 65 and the regulations, especially on the complaints mechanism, they say the most interesting thing that I found, they say it's the data commissioner may issue damages to complainants. I was like, wow, okay.
That's a very interesting provision.
Yeah, I would have expected it to be the courts, but it's the data commissioner, but there's no scale. So, by and large, Luisa, those are the key highlights of this Data Protection Act that we've had since November 2019. I'm sure we'll also talk about the regulations that were published on the 31st of December.
Yes.
And that were approved by Parliament sometime in February.
Yes.
Yep.
In fact, that's the next thing that I wanted us to speak about. So, there are three recently gazetted data protection regulations. And I wanted to ask what you think the impact of those regulations would be and what then individuals and organizations would have to do to comply with the provisions of those regulations in line with the DPA as well.
Okay, let's start with the general regulations.
Yes.
So the general regulations have what we call enabling the rights of a data subject. Talks about provisions on restriction for commercial use of personal data, obligations of data controllers, transfer of data outside the jurisdiction. It also provides for data protection impact assessments. So what they do, the regulation is that from the provision, you see, for example, Section 37 of the Act provides for commercial use of data.
Mm-hmm.
Then the regulations now unpack that. What is this commercial use of data and to what extent can you use personal data commercially? Then we also have the regulations, the data protection regulations on the complaints mechanisms, the dispute resolution mechanism. So these ones provided how, when you make a complaint to the data commissioner, how will the data commissioner handle that complaint? What are the timelines to say that they have received and admitted the complaint? What are the timelines to make a decision? When an administrative decision is an administrative order is given or a penalty notice is given, what does that mean? The right to appeal to the High Court, etc. Then we have the regulations on registration, that every data controller or data processor, but there are also some thresholds.
Yes.
I think it talks about 5 million shillings or 10 employees, if you have above that you need to be registered, or even if you are less and you carry out some functions that are set out in the general regulations, because I think one of the schedule now sets out if you're doing like, for example, if you're in your banking, if you're providing basic education, you must register
mm-hmm.
with the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner.
Yes.
So those basically are the key highlights. And what the enactment of these regulations by the cabinet secretary mean is that now, by and large, the Data Protection Act now is operational. That there is no reason why any data controller or data processor should not comply with provisions of the Data Protection Act and these regulations. So what we will expect in the near future is that the most interesting thing, there's been silence from the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner with Parliament having approved these regulations.
Yes.
So by now, the office will have told everybody, Kenyans, that now, hey, these regulations are now in force. Please comply. We'll be coming to carry out investigations on audit within this period of time. Or we will start registering data controllers or data processors 6 months from this date.
Yes.
So ensure that you put your house
in order.
Ensure that you put your house in order.
Yes.
That said, there are some gaps in these regulations that you will find as a practitioner. For example, if you want to object to your data being processed, if you want your restriction of your data, if you want rectification of your data, you must fill a form.
Mm-hmm.
They are very heavy about filling forms. You need to fill forms. You need to fill a form, and the forms are provided. You know, when you're dealing with data protection and a fundamental right and freedom, which is the right to privacy, this should have been simplified.
Yes.
At least. Another gap is that they don't give directions about how to appoint data protection officers. Of course, Section 24 uses the word may designate or appoint a data protection officer. But when you look at how these regulations are crafted, you cannot function without a data protection officer.
No, you cannot.
It is not possible. And like I usually tell my corporate clients is that don't even think about having an external counsel or an external person to be a data protection officer. Please. Designate one person in-house. You don't have to have a new hire, but you can look within your institution who best will carry out the functions of the data protection officer. So there are no guidelines on this data protection officer.
Yes.
Another gap is that these regulations don't tell us how the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner will come up with what you call adequacy decisions. So an adequacy decision is whereby the data protection authority will look at a country, let's say like South Africa, and say that South Africa has similar data protection statutes
yes.
as Kenya.
Yes.
So you may share or may transfer data freely between Kenya and
South Africa.
But the regulations don't tell us how will the data commissioner come out to that decision. If you look at the EU GDPR, there's a very elaborate process, and I can point listeners to the process of the adequacy decision for the UK. UK was still in the EU, but they had to apply. It had to be considered by the council. This decision had to go to the European Data Protection Board. They had to make comments and that kind of thing. So for us, we don't have similar. So is it that today the data commissioner can come and say, oh, Somalia is adequate.
or Tanzania is inadequate.
Or Tanzania is inadequate. The question is, what will have guided the data commissioner to make that decision? Another gap that I see in these regulations is that they do not provide for what we call certifications. You see, for example, one way you can allow industry to comply with the data protection principles is having certification standards. For example, you could have standards for advocates. Say, for if you're running a law firm, if you meet these standards, then you're compliant. If you're in the banking industry and you comply, for example, first of all, you comply with the central bank prudential guidelines and something else, then you're compliant. So there's a gap. It doesn't provide for certification schemes. That's a huge gap. Also, it doesn't provide how will the data commissioner and industries, different industries or different sector, come up with sector-specific guidelines. A huge gap.
That's a huge gap. So there needs to be a lot more engagement in terms of that.
Yeah. And then another thing, you remember when these regulations came into place, first we had drafts in April last year.
Yes.
Then we made comments, then the data commissioner disappeared. Then the next thing the data commissioner did is come up now with, on 31st December, we are seeing published
regulations. Yes.
So there should have been some further public participation just to fill in these gaps, because the same even when in legislation, this first draft of the legislation, there's usually a first draft, there's public participation.
Yes.
There's a revised draft, there's public participation, and then they can publish that. Another issue that I've seen is the timelines. Now, when you look at the provisions on, especially the provisions dealing with dispute resolution, there's a challenge in timelines. It's not clear. For example, when you make a complaint and the complaint is admitted, it doesn't say exactly the period of time that that should take. It's also not very clear at what point does is the decision, because you see, it talks about things like once the person has been served by with a decision.
Yes.
That's weird. That's not how even in legal practice we do it.
No, it isn't.
It's from the date of the decision. So I find that will be problematic. The timelines, the timelines that are there in the dispute resolution regulations, that will be a problem. Another challenge is in the registration. So when you look at, for example, when you look at the registration regulations, let me just pull them out here.
Yes.
Because I need to say this. There are some conditions under regulation 5 on what you need to do to comply. Then in regulation 10, where the Data Protection Commissioner office may decline, it brings about something that was not there in regulation 5.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the issue of, it says the data commissioner may decline to grant an application where appropriate safeguards for protection of privacy of the data subject have not been provided by the controller or the processor. But in 5, that's not a condition to apply.
Mm.
So, as I say, I wish they had allowed for further consultation so that we can deal with some of these challenges. Another problem that I see is that it is not specific on something like carrying out a data inventory. You know, yes. If you have regulations, for compliance, practitioners know a data inventory is very important because it's with a data inventory, and a data inventory basically is a list of all the personal data that you're processing within your institution, where you're getting it from, who you're sharing it with, what are you using it for, what are the legal reasons you're processing. So there's no specific guidance on things like data inventories, record of processing operations. So those are gaps. Hopefully, I don't know. We're in an election year, so I don't foresee any adjustments to this. But despite these gaps, I can say cautiously, at least we have some regulations.
At least we have some.
Yes.
Okay. So with all that you've said in mind, one of the things that will come top of mind to a lot of listeners is this issue of direct marketing. So you're on your phone or you're on your laptop or tablet, and then you get an email or a text from a supermarket or a store or an organization that you bought something with or interacted from.
Yeah.
And you have not given your consent for this marketing information to be sent to you or for your personal data to be shared, such as your phone number, your email address, maybe even your national ID or passport number. These regulations, do they have any specific opt-in and opt-out mechanisms in terms of direct marketing?
Yes. So allow me just to refer directly to these. So these provisions, of course, they provide for commercial use of data.
Yes.
So when you look at part 3 of the general regulations, they talk about commercial use of data.
Yes.
But then one of the things that I was reading and I was like, Regulation 15 talks about a controller or a processor may not use personal data, may use personal data other than sensitive personal data.
Yes.
For marketing. But then surely, let's read Section 2 of the Data Protection Act and see what is termed, just allow me to read verbatim. It says,
yes,
sensitive personal data is data that reveals a person's race, health status, ethnic origin, conscience, belief, genetic data, biometric data, property details, marital status, family details, including names of children, parents, spouses, sex, etc.
Yes.
So my sex is sensitive data.
It is.
So if the regulations say you can't use sensitive data for commercial purposes, then what does that mean? You're basically killing commercial use of personal data.
You are, because as you've rightly described, all those things point to identifiers, things that identify the data subject. So your race, your gender, etc. And how, as you rightly pointed out, is commercial marketing going to take place if you're not allowing these organizations to then use sensitive personal data with or without consent?
Because you see, if people want to, let me just use something simple. They want to advertise, they want to do direct marketing for vasectomy services.
Yes.
Then they send a message to you and to I. Because now they can't decide, they can't use parameters such as sex.
Yes.
Or somebody's gender.
Yes.
That's very absurd.
It is.
But then, as Section 37 of the Data Protection Act provides that for use of personal, for you to use personal data for commercial purposes, you must seek consent.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be express consent.
Mm-hmm.
And the Act also says, the onus is on the data controller or data processor to prove that there was consent. Okay? So that protects us as Kenyans, is that if you receive direct marketing through SMS, through email, and you're not provided consent, it runs afoul of the provisions of Section 37 and Part 3 of these general regulations.
Yes.
So that there's an opt-in. You must opt-in. But then the regulations also say that if you have been receiving, if you opted in or you've been receiving this this messaging and then you want to opt out, then there's a provision for that, because it says that where you're given, where you're doing direct marketing, commercial use of data, that message or that information should say who's the origin, how may you opt out if you wish to opt out. If you wish to make a complaint, how do you go about it? One gap that is in these regulations, you see, there's also marketing for core services.
Yes.
Let's look at this. A bank. A bank will need to receive messaging, for example, if some money has been withdrawn from your account, you've used your ATM or your credit card, or there's been a deposit.
Yes.
Okay? And what provisions they need to distinguish what will be cited as commercial use of personal data for core services that are being offered and for advertising for advertising purposes. But by and large, just to finish answering your question, is that those are the provisions. You may opt, there must be consent. Once you opt in, you need to be provided a very easy mechanism to opt out. So whether it's within a website or just sending a text, and it should be free of charge. You should not be charged for this. Something else that I think is good, it says that you cannot profile children to provide direct marketing to them.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a good provision.
It is a very good provision. Yeah. Okay. So as you've heard from Mugambi, you now have to have express consent for opt-in to use commercial data for marketing, and also express opt-out mechanisms as well. And I think the regulations also provide that for the simple opt-out mechanisms, it needs to be both in English and Kiswahili, or that a language that the data subject would then easily understand.
The challenge also, Louisa, is that there are no timelines. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at, so if I opt out, what are the timelines? Is it immediate?
Do I have to wait for a week?
24 hours,
uh-huh.
72 hours.
Uh-huh.
So there's also that gap.
That's true. That's rather problematic, because if you're giving me an express way to opt in and to opt out, you should then let me know the exact timelines for when my request would then be processed, or I would be removed from your list, etc.
Correct. And that's not clear in these regulations.
Uh-huh. And then also, you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, you discussed a data protection impact assessment, or a DPIA. Maybe you can just discuss a little bit about the value of an organization carrying this out.
So a DPIA, and that's in Section 31 of the Data Protection Act, is that where you're going to process data. Let me give an example. You're a bank, and the bank wants to come up with an application for people to do online banking, where they may download either on Apple Store or on Android. Okay? So what needs to be done is that you need to carry out a data protection impact assessment And this data protection impact assessment will describe this app. What is this app trying to do? So let's say it's GVA Bank of Kenya.
Yes.
GVA, we say we want to have GVA Online, GVA Pesa.
Yes.
Then you see what will be the... So you come first, you need to describe this. What is the technology you're using? You describe the technology, you identify what personal data you'll be processing. Is it personal data? Is it sensitive? Is it sensitive personal data? Yeah, from whom will you be collecting this personal data? And then who are these people? Do you have people below the age of 18? For example, I mean, there are banking services for people who are below the age of 18.
Yes.
Some below above the age of 18.
Yes.
I've said you need to describe the technology. Then you need to say, what is the legitimate reason for you to offer this product? So, for example, if you are a bank, you need to describe, for example, you are registered under the CBK Act and provide your services to make your services easily available.
Yes.
Then you're having this application. Okay. Then further, you need to identify what are the potential risks to the data subject for you processing this personal data and the sensitive personal data.
Yes.
Some of the potential risks you call a highlight will be, for example, denial of financial services. There could be issues to do with bias, discrimination, issues of security, etc.
Yes.
Then for each risk, you need to say how you're going to deal with each risk. If it's security, you can say we are going to provide two-factor authentication. For bias, we'll ensure that the data we use is authentic and correctly collected directly from the data subject and these kind of things.
Yes.
Okay. So carrying out a data protection impact assessment, it provides a way of accountability. That one, it demonstrates that you understand the service or the product that you're offering. Secondly, you understand what personal data you'll be processing and from whom will you be processing this information. Will you be sharing this information? Will third parties have access to this information and why? For example, if it is this app, you can say, for example, Central Bank, we'll have access to all this personal data. Why? Central Bank is the bank of banks.
Yes.
Under the Central Bank of Kenya Act, under regulation this, under the Central Bank of Kenya Act, they are mandated to do this, this and that.
Yes.
You can also say, for example, for issues to do with money laundering, proceeds of crime, money laundering, etc., there's a regulator that will also must have access to information within the bank. So you can say this one will, this institution, you can say also investigators, banking fraud, etc. So you describe all that and what are the potential risks for these people having access or the justification for them having access. So when you do this is that you identify, the most important is that you identify the potential risks. The potential risks, one, of course, to the data subject because of the right to privacy of the data subject. Potential risk to your core services because you'll identify things like hacking. You can say hacking could not might not just affect the data subjects, could also affect the banking services. So you need to identify those and how you'll mitigate.
Yes.
And the act says that you need to do this data protection impact assessment if you identify high risk. So now the data protection impact assessment, there's low, medium, high risk. Of course, most people will say it's low risk.
Yes, they will.
Most people will say low risk. But the unfortunate thing is that when the Data Protection Commissioner, Office of the Data Protection Commissioner comes to carry out investigation and they realize this was actually high risk, not low risk, that may put you into trouble.
It may.
So once you identify this risk, how to mitigate this risk, if it's high risk, the act actually says if it's high risk, you need to put in the data protection impact assessment report to the commissioner and 60 days before. And it says the most interesting thing, it says, if you don't hear from the commissioner, go ahead and go ahead and process. Yeah. But if you hear from the commissioner, then it means there's something. My other challenge, looking ahead, is that will the data protection commissioner's office have the capacity? Let's look at, for example, if all banks in Kenya, how many banks are there? 30-something or 40-something? Let's say we have 40 banks in Kenya.
Yes.
All 40 banks submit data protection impact assessment about products they want to roll out. Just banks. And they all submit to the Data Protection Commission. Remember, this office is also carrying out other functions.
It is.
Will they have the capacity to do this work? And so those are some of the questions as we go ahead. As I said, it's good. We have regulations.
Yes.
They are not perfect. They have some glaring gaps, yes. Some really big gaps. But then we are here I also hope that the capacity of the data protection officer, I mean, I think it's a month ago, they advertised for positions. And I hope they also have the budgetary allocation for this, because Kenya, we know that you establish an institution and refuse to fund it.
That's true.
Yeah.
And so you hamper how well the institution can perform its functions.
Yes.
But as you've rightly said, I hope that the ODPC is going to be equipped with enough budget to do that, the work that they've been called to do, but also second, that they're able to build in terms of capacity, because I saw the same ad as well, where they put out a call asking for some legal officers and a number of members of staff into the office as well. But then now this is our chance as well as advocates to plug in and help fill in the gaps. Yeah. And that's exactly what we would help you do here at Kikera and Badgama Advocates. You can reach out to us, info@gvalawfirm.com. You can come and schedule a meeting with us. Our head office is here at 56 Mudiri Road, Westlands. We also have branches in Nanyuki and Mombasa. You can follow us on our LinkedIn page. That's Gikera and Badgama Advocates. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at GVA Law Firm, and on Facebook as well, Gikera and Badgama Advocates. And we're able to offer you all the regulatory and compliance advice you may need. If you would need to appoint a data protection officer, as Mogambi has pointed out, it says may appoint a DPO. If you would like to outsource that function to ourselves, we are more than able to come and help and plug in as well. And so Mogambi, maybe I would ask what your takeaways are. We've had this act in place for the last 3 years, and now we have these regulations that now have come into force and organizations must comply. What are your takeaways in terms of regulatory and compliance, and also just in general in the data protection and privacy space in Kenya?
When you look at other data protection authorities or data protection oversight or compliance, it's not easy.
It's not.
And it requires, one, it requires political commitment, political goodwill, economic commitment, economic goodwill.
Yes.
Because the political goodwill is what will provide funds or resources to the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner to function.
Yes.
The question, will that be done? Also, if the Data Protection Commissioner is issuing administrative fines, are they able to follow through? I mean, interesting. I think there's something I read last year that the Information Commissioner's Office of the UK was having trouble to collect fines that they had issued.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, if the ICO is complaining that they're not able to collect their fines, what about us? I mean, where our commission is fairly young.
Yes.
Then the political goodwill is also, when you look at, I know people say don't compare with the EU, but when you compare with the EU, the legislators, they came up with very strong rules. They came up with very strong laws to ensure that at least at the statutory level, at the legal level, the legal guidance mechanism is very strong. Ours, our Data Protection Act, not that strong, but it's there anyway. It's there. Also for the political goodwill, and that's why I say the gap of coming up with adequacy decisions. Look at the adequacy is also a political issue.
It is.
You look at the adequacy decision process between the UK and the EU. What was mostly surrounding it was politics.
Mm.
The politics of UK leaving the EU. They're like, you guys, you left us now. So then,
yes,
we are not sure whether you still comply
or not. Or what not. About my Brexit?
Yeah. Then also the issue of the economic muscle, because you see, let me give an example of Ireland, the Data Protection Authority Ireland. It's been receiving a lot of heat for not taking action against the Facebooks, the Googles, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge could be, you see, for example, if you're a data protection authority and you're going against some of these big dogs, they'll come with 50 lawyers.
They will.
In your office, how many lawyers do you have as an authority, as a data protection authority, to take them on? So they have the economic muscle to take you on as a regulator.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty about this is, I can say there's this activist in, he's Austrian, he's called Max Krems. And Krems is just a small, he runs, I think he's not too small, but it's relatively compared to the social media companies. It's a small outfit that has challenged how the Facebooks, the Googles process information of EU citizens. And that's why for example, we had the Court of Justice of the European Union stopping what you call the SCRAMS 1, SCRAMS 2 decision, stopping the transfer of data from Europe to the US.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that opportunity also for individuals who may be termed as activists or just people to challenge, or just individual Kenyans, people within the Republic of Kenya, to challenge how their data is being processed. Also to challenge, because the Irish Deep Data Protection Authority has been challenged because people are saying it is incompetent because it's not making the right decisions. Of course, I think that's why the last year they issued almost $300 million against WhatsApp. And I've seen a few days ago, I think it's around 50 million euros. Actually, I think it's against Meta,
mm-hmm,
for processing of, for lack of sufficient safeguards in processing of personal data. So there's all this. Of course, we all wish the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner well. And, you know, even wishing them well, they need the resources, the capacity and know-how. And also, as they hire or as people hire data protection officers, there's also lack of capacity. Let's be honest. There's lack. People, by and large, people will say, you know, I've read the Data Protection Act, I've read the regulations, so I can be a DPO. But there are more nuanced issues that you need to deal with. But I believe as we go by, as they go by, we'll have Kenya-specific certifications. Because when you think about certifications or data protection, there's like, for example, the CIPP Europe, CIPP US. They're really not specific to Kenya.
True.
So that's another gap that I hope will be filled. I think, as you're aware, for example, the Kenya School of Law, where I teach, created a program, a four-day certification program for training on data protection and privacy in Kenya that will equip someone with the knowledge and the technical know-how of how to carry out the basic data protection officer services.
Yes.
So that said, it's not all gloom, but I think between now and maybe August, Kenya, what we have most focused on is the elections. So we don't know whether there'll be sufficient funds for the data commissioner to establish themselves and to start asking for registration. Because another way they can, the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner can raise funds is through registration.
Yes.
Most interesting thing, they also say that public sector institutions must register and pay. So I'm really waiting to see that.
Yes.
Whether public sector institutions will actually pay that registration fee and whether they'll follow the provisions that on what really needs to be done to register.
Yes.
So we can say much more, but those are just the highlights of what that's just coming from the top of my head about moving forward or looking ahead. What's possible to happen.
True. So don't fall foul of the law. Gikera and Badgama, or GVA as we call ourselves, we've done a lot of trainings on data protection and privacy, both for our clients and both for individual and our corporate clients. And we're more than grateful and happy to help you comply as well. So reach out to us, info@gvalawfirm.com. And you can reach us also on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you very much, Mugambi, for coming on as a guest. We've had a very insightful conversation, and I hope our listeners will walk away more enlightened on data protection and privacy. It was really a pleasure hosting you on today's podcast. Until next time. Let's get free, yeah.